Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, May 8, 2018. President Salva Kiir changes his position on rebel leader Riek Machar.
If you forgive those who are among you here, those of Gabon, those of Ezekiel, and John Luke, why would you not forgive Riek? I still believe that Riek is a citizen of South Sudan. He will come.
But presidential spokesman says otherwise.
Machar can come to Cuba, start Sudanese, and he did not revoke his citizenship. And therefore, he can come and be guaranteed the security, but not as a political leader.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top official of the SPLM in opposition faction led by Riek Machar says his party is not focused on reunifying the SPLM. SPLM IO's shadow governor for Imatong State says the 2015 Arusha reunification agreement has been overtaken by a number of events, including the high-level revitalization forum. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir surprised his party officials last week with this statement while addressing the National Liberation Council meeting in Juba.
You bring Riek Machar to Juba here. Bring him to Juba, I guarantee safety. And I will protect him with the National Army. If you don't believe me, the RPF is here. You bring the RPF to take charge of the security of Riek Machar in Juba. This is where we will be meeting him, and so that we talk to him.
Mr. Kiir said he also wants all former detainees, including former SPLM Secretary General Pagan Amum, to return to Juba in accordance with the Arusha reunification agreement.
If you forgive those who are among you here, those of Gabon, those of Ezekiel, and John Luke, why would you not forgive Riek? I still believe that Riek is a citizen of South Sudan.
President Kiir says he believes insecurity across the country has prevented Machar and other opposition leaders from returning to South Sudan. He admitted that insecurity has forced millions of South Sudanese to seek refuge in neighboring countries and in protection sites inside South Sudan. He said it's time that he and other South Sudanese leaders swallow their pride and work together to change the direction of the country.
I want all of us to consider the plight of our people, and then we change our ways of doing things.
But Imatong State Governor-designate Oyet Nathaniel, who also heads the SPLM-IO cluster for governance at the high-level forum in Addis Ababa, says his group was surprised to hear Kiir call for Machar's return. Nathaniel says Machar will only come back to Juba after a comprehensive peace deal is signed with a clear agenda for the way forward.
We need a new transition altogether, a new governance arrangement, a new security arrangement for the country to secure the transition. We need an overhaul in the security sector, considering the fact that the fighting forces under Salva Kiir now are militias collected from Barakazal, parts of Upper Nile. You have the Durkubeng, the Kianganyor, the Gelweng. These are the ones that have been terrorizing the country.
Nathaniel says the SPLM-IO no longer recognizes the Arusha reunification agreement. South Sudanese activist Jame David Kolok, who heads the local NGO Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, welcomes Mr. Kiir's call for Machar to return home, saying it is a good gesture for peace.
We believe that as long as somebody is recognized as a citizen of this country, he is also protected by the constitution of this country, which defines the rights and duties of a citizen. So if the president is saying that Machar comes in, and yet 2-3 days, then we keep hearing certain individuals also trying to put some caveats. For example, if he comes in as an ordinary citizen, or if he comes in, he shouldn't do this and do that. I think that does not reflect a genuine call for his return.
Some Kiir administration officials have called the suggestions that Machar return to Juba unacceptable. Information Minister Michael Makuei told reporters in Juba in May last year that Machar should continue to stay in exile because he would cause problems if he came back to Juba. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
As you have just heard, President Salva Kiir appears to have changed his earlier position regarding rebel leader Riek Machar. Mr. Kiir now says his former first vice president is welcome to return to Juba and will be given full protection. Machar fled Juba during renewed fighting and eventually landed in South Africa in 2016 for medical checkup. Machar's wife, Angelina Teny, accuses South Africa of holding Machar under house arrest. Presidential spokesman, Teny, told VOA's James Batty that Machar can come back to Juba, but not as a political leader.
Which is true, the president during the address to the SPLM National Liberation Session that was held at Freedom Hall 2 days ago, said Riek Machar can come to Juba, South Sudanese, and he did not revoke citizenship, and therefore he can come and would be guaranteed the security, but not as a political leader.
Okay, let's take it from there first. What happened throughout these years since the fighting began, 2013, your government has maintained that Riek Machar is a warmonger. What changed your president's mind?
Well, there must be a political solution to a fighting that is taking place. And enough is enough. South Sudanese wanted to have peace. And since Riek Machar has realized himself that he cannot make war, he cannot continue to fight, he cannot capture the presidency by force, is an indication that, you know, there has to be some sort of coming together. The SPLM, during the Arusha agreement that purported to reunify the three factions of the SPLM, namely the SPLM-IG, the SPLM-IO, with the school part, the one for Dr. Riek Machar, with the main outside the country, and the other one for the current first vice president, General Adam Dengai, who has by virtue of the agreement or resolution of conflict in the Republic of South. The SPLM FDs, that is the political detainees. These three factions have to come. SPLM IO, Saban Dengai, has already now reunified with the SPLM. And therefore, the Yamacha should come back now to the country as a normal citizen. So it is the report the president was trying to reiterate.
Now, this announcement by your president is coming on the heels of the upcoming consultations and the next round of peace talks coming up soon with IGA. Was the president pushed by IGA to make way for Riek Machar's return?
No, the president has a moral obligation as a leader of the country and as a leader of the SPLA. It is so necessary that, you know, all the political leaders coming together, and particularly the SPLM, in an attempt to reunify the SPLM. The president found himself on a moral obligation to do this. So if Riek Machar comes to the country and stays peacefully until the election time, he can run for any position he wants within the SPLM party and within the country.
The announcement is also coming at a time that we have heard that your vice president, Taban Dengai, has dissolved his political party. Is this to make way for Riek Machar to take up the vice presidency?
No, they are not connected. Taban Dengai, the first vice president, dissolved his wing of the SPLM, which is the SPLM-IO, in an attempt to implement the Arusha agreement, which calls for the unification of the three factions of the SPLM. So it has nothing to do with giving Riek Machar any leeway, because Riek Machar is not relevant here.
That's a presidential spokesman, Teny Wek Teny, speaking to VOA's James Batty from Juba. The acting Secretary General of SPLM in government says her party is taking steps to resolve disagreement over how to conduct party elections to avoid a repeat of a dispute during a national convention late in 2013, where official ally to President Kiir proposed an open election while Machar wanted secret ballots. As Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba, that disagreement sparked off the ongoing conflict in South Sudan.
Speaking at the opening session of a two-day state governors' conference in Juba, SPLM Acting Secretary General Gemma Nunu Kumba says people should not panic but rather have hope in the new drive to reunify the ruling party. Kumba says The issues that led to the outbreak of violence in 2013 have now been resolved, including elections of party leaders.
Initially, it was only the chairman who was elected, and he appoints his deputies. But now the Arusha agreement says those members who disagreed at that time were for the opinion that the deputies should be elected. So we have taken care of that. Even the mode of election, you know, initially it used to be by show of hand. And then they said, no, we want secret ballot. We said, no problem. That's not a cause of fighting. Let's accept that. This is what we are going to follow.
In a surprise announcement last week, President Salva Kiir reinstated all SPLM leaders, including former Vice President Riek Machar, to their previous positions prior to the 2013 split in a bid to fully implement the Arusha reunification agreement. Kumba says once the leaders are back in Juba, party members will elect new leaders, including chairman, the position currently held by President Kiir.
When the peace agreement is signed, we will all go for reorganization of the SPLM at the grassroots level. We will hold congresses, and then we will come, we will prepare for our national convention, during which now the leadership of the party can be re-elected. If you contest and you are not elected, then you have to accept and embrace your colleague who have won. And then we move ahead and you wait for next chance to contest again.
32 SPLM governors, including four from the recently dissolved SPLM IO faction, led by First Vice President Taban Dengai, have gathered in Juba to start the SPLM reunification process. Mangar Buong, governor and SPLM chairman for Eastern Lake State, is among those attending the governor's conference. He says breaking up and reuniting the SPLA factions is nothing new.
In 83, we differ, then we unite. Then 91, we differ, then we unite. 2013, then we unite. I hope we are fed up with the wars and these differences. We will still follow the constitution. What is now footed in constitution, we'll follow it.
As SPLM leaders ramp up efforts to reunite the ruling party's factions, mediators from the regional bloc IGAD are preparing to hold the next phase of the high-level revitalization forum in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, from May 17 through the 21st. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, 20 youth are arrested in Jonglei State. Stay tuned for that story after this break.
Speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there another African language you would like to learn, and why?
Swahili, because I know that's the language with the eastern part of Africa, and I have an intention to be there, especially in Kenya, so that I can be able to communicate well with them.
I want to learn Hausa because I like the way it sounds.
Ronyoro and Dusoga. They were so gay. They are just interesting me with the way they speak, their language. So I just get excited.
I like to learn the Yoruba because now we have our fellow Nigerians here in Ghana. They are everywhere and they speak their language, and I would love to understand whatever they say.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about the lack of resources for midwives. South Sudanese midwives are calling on the government in Juba to increase their salaries and send them for training so that they can continue to save lives of pregnant South Sudanese women. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Lucia Thomas is the deputy chairperson of the South Sudan Nurses and Midwives Association. She says in order for midwives to deliver quality maternity care, the government should improve their working conditions. Thomas says many health facilities in South Sudan lack basic supplies.
There is no even supplies in the hospital because we have like a basic practical for the nurses how to prepare beds. But now we found sometimes you go to the hospital, you will not find even a mattress. You will not find even a bed sheet to prepare the bed. For the midwife, sometimes you will find there is a woman coming to deliver. You will not find even the essential drugs for the delivery. And sometimes like gloves, you will not find gloves.
She says many midwives are not paid well in South Sudan.
The salary we are receiving, or the nurses and midwives receiving now, this is not a salary. For those the lower, let me say they are receiving 1,000 something. The senior people, they are receiving 3,000. If you compare with this current situation, it's very difficult. This is, let me say, in the national level. If you go to state, it is less even. Some of them are receiving 300, 500.
Thomas says some midwives were trained in the 70s and 80s and are in need of further studies in healthcare. Agnes Joanne is a midwife at Juba Teaching Hospital. She says the hospital lacks the necessary tools for her job.
In the facility, you may have inadequate gloves or maybe disinfectants, or even electricity may not be there. Sometimes even water may not be there. And then yet I need to deliver the mother, or I need to offer quality service. So it becomes a challenge. Actually, for delivery, we are supposed to use sterile gloves, but midwives end up sometimes using non-sterile gloves. Those are just clean gloves because you just have to use what you have.
Joanne says midwives also need to live close to medical facilities so that they can help pregnant women on short notice. But she says because of a lack of transportation and insecurity at night, many babies are delivered at home without the help of a midwife. She says she once had to deliver a baby in Muniki using the flashlight on her mobile phone because of a lack of electricity.
I had only 3 minutes. 3 minutes to put the sheets and just to receive baby just there and then. There was no light, so I have to put the phone on my mouth and then lit the torch just to help me see where the baby's head.
Dr. Wilfred Ochan is the deputy country representative at the United Nations Population Fund in South Sudan. He says at independence, South Sudan had only 8 trained midwives, but today there are approximately 600 qualified midwives in the country. Dr. Ochan says the government needs to work with development partners and donors to train more midwives.
We should have good training colleges where midwives are trained in. So good tutors, lecturers for the midwives program, good skilled laboratories where midwives practice how to deliver, how to give family planning, how to take care of babies in case they're done before they even go to touch the actual patient. Good library where they can get good resources and materials for learning. And of course, the whole environment for learning should be good enough for them to go through the education properly.
He says the working environment for midwives and nurses must also be improved so that health workers can deliver quality maternal and infant care.
Do we have enough facilities where midwives can deliver from? Do you have equipment in those facilities? Do you have the drugs in those facilities? Do you have the supplies in those facilities? Are we recruiting these midwives we have trained? Because we can train this one. Then we also need to recruit them and deploy them in those areas which need this kind of services. So this will need a lot of other things. The incentive programs, the motivational system that is put in place, the supervision arrangement that is provided to them.
In 2015, the United Nations and the World Bank estimated that in every 100,000 birth lives, 789 women die during delivery. Ochan says, besides the lack of well-equipped facilities, the high maternal mortality rate in South Sudan is because 80% of mothers deliver at home without a qualified midwife. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Jonglei, where the police have arrested dozens of youth and some chiefs following a communal violence over the weekend in which more than 20 people were injured. One police officer claims the fighting began after a young woman eloped with after a young man eloped with a girl. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
More than 70 youth arrested after their fighting were lined up at Bor police station and lashed 30 strokes by their cane before being sent to a police cell. Speaking in Arabic, Bor Town Police Officer Major Daniel Mabur says the youth and chiefs will soon be arraigned in court.
We have arrested 3 chiefs together with the groups of youths that clashed. The total number of all those we have arrested is 79. Some of them who are injured are in hospital, and the rest are here with us in custody.
Mabure accuses the chiefs of allegedly inciting the violence. He says Thorn is now calm, but officers are searching for more youth suspected of taking part in the clashes.
Some of them are believed to be from a warrior in Eastern Lagos State. There are 9. We have their names. These 9 people are yet to be arrested. They ran away when they saw the police.
Traditional chief Peter Kwal is among the suspects in police custody. Speaking in his native Dinka, Kwal says he tried to stop the youth from fighting, but they would not listen.
A girl in love with a young man to his home. The brothers and the relative of the girl went and took back the girl. The youth on the girl's side became furious, but we tried to calm them down and told them that the issue will be resolved by the elders from the two sides. But unfortunately, the following day, the relatives of the girl met the young man at dancing ceremony and beat him up. That was how it happened. Then the police went and arrested everybody, including us.
Another chief, Riang Agul, says he too tried in vain to convince youth from his village to avoid violence. Speaking in Dinka, Agul says the police should not blame local chiefs for the clashes.
Those who start the fighting are known by names. The police have to put us dealt with them according to the law. I learned that some of the youth even slaughtering the goat and art in the group to prepare for the fighting. Such kind of fight is instigated by the dancing or wrestling. This was why I keep the drum with me in my village. I do not allow any dancing at night.
Acheng Bol, the assistant chief administrator of Makolishwe Boma, where the fighting took place, condemned the violence.
I want to say that this kind of conflict caused by girl elopement, dance ceremonies, and so on will destroy our community. If leaders are not serious, if they are ignored at the beginning, they can cause this division and will lead to people assaulting themselves like what has happened now.
Chief Bol calls on the community elders and chiefs to identify troublemakers who incite violence in their communities and report them to police. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
And we now go for some news on development. Taiwan says it regrets the one China policy insisted on by Beijing prevents it from providing much needed development aid to most countries in Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Taipei.
Taiwan was in a relatively good diplomatic position in Africa several years ago. Taiwan's Deputy Secretary General for International Cooperation and Development, Pei Po Li, says this made it possible for those countries that had diplomatic relations with Taiwan to benefit from his agency's aid projects.
Previously, we have nearby 9 countries with Taiwan, for instance, Senegal, Gambia, Chad, Niger, Liberia, Central Africa, also the South Tome Principe. Yeah. 6 years ago, they still have the relation with Taiwan, but that shift to China.
Lee says Taiwan had invested a lot in the African region, but all that is now in the past. He says Taiwan currently maintains diplomatic relations with only two countries, Burkina Faso and Swaziland. He says Taiwan has been running productive agricultural and livestock, as well as vocational and medical programs in Swaziland since 1975. As for Burkina Faso, he says a successful irrigation project on the Ku River, which was started in 1967, ended in 1973. That was when Burkina Faso broke off relations with Taiwan in favor of China. But Lee tells VOA Burkina Faso restored ties with Taiwan in 1994. He suggests the lure of billions of dollars in Chinese aid was not strong enough to keep this impoverished country within Beijing's diplomatic orbit.
Is it coming from the Burkina Faso people to think about the 1967 in Gu River, this 1967? They're quite a good memory of so the people to urge the government to restore the relation with Taiwan. So that pressure comes from people.
Since resuming development work in Burkina Faso, the Taiwanese development official says the country's irrigation system has been expanded. He says a program is ongoing to train local nurses and medical doctors, and an infant and maternal health program is having great success in reducing both maternal and infant deaths. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Taipei.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Mrs. Malakal by DJ D and Nyang J. We've been listening to DJ D and Nyang J with the song Miss Malakal. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. How do you like this show? Let us know what you think. You can send us an email at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also reach us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We invite you to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.